Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
He was the big hitting, booze swigging, chain smoking bad boy of golf. The Blazers, they tried to ban him, but John Daly was the people's champion. From knife-wielding lovers to tossing 55 grand off a bridge, meet the Wild Thing.
You can't drink like me, you can't smoke like me, so don't try and be like me, motherfucker. Get your shit straight and fucking let's party together, you cocksucking motherfucker.
Welcome back to the Upshot Podcast. I'm Jack Rivlin. I'm going to have to break it. And I've got Zach with me, as always.
Howdy, partner.
And jumping on this horse and taking it a ride is our guest. We're joined by the voice of golf, Mr. James Craig.
Hello.
Hello.
Brilliant intro. But yeah, there's none of that coming out of my mouth. Sorry. It's an absolute joy to be here. And I would say that since I've been commentating on golf over the last few years, there's no fucker like John Daly, because he is awesome. And my life, Thursday through Sunday, would be a lot more interesting if there was more people.
Are you not watching the sort of sub PGA tours that he's on?
The Hooters Tour and things like that. Sadly not.
I quite like the sound of the Hooters Tour. Yeah, he's obviously a real don't make him like that anymore. Did they make him like that before? He's one of a kind, John Daly, isn't he?
I think these swashbuckling kind of big booze in, deep south, rolling a few dice, turning up for your tea time after 3 hours sleep was a thing, but it wasn't very well documented because equally it's got that whole gentlemanly feel to it. Certainly not as brazen with it as John Daly, you know, swigging beers on the way round and that kind of thing. And so open and just embracing the fact that he was basically a redneck who was good at golf. So no, in short, they didn't really make him like that, and they've definitely not made him like it since. I'm looking forward to getting stuck into this one, lads.
It's the literally he does not give a fuck thing that's so amazing. I mean, that we'll get onto them, but the stories of him like costing himself millions of dollars just because he wants to have a party, that kind of thing. Like, there's something quite admirable about that, even if, you know, can get a bit hairy for the bloke.
I think so. I think it's some of those that he's probably been incredibly destructive to a lot of those close to him, which is the case with a lot of the subjects of your podcast, but actually very, very entertaining for those who are observing from afar like us. So, you know, who cares?
That was kind of the impression that I had doing the research for this. There's a lot of stuff that on the face of it would seem quite sad. There's like a lot of drinking, a lot of gambling, but he seems to so unapologetically love every moment of it that it kind of seems something. It's less sad.
It's all just a wild ride. Sorry, I nearly slipped into the accent again. I'll spare everyone's ears. It's quite grating. I was, when we were talking about this before, I was saying to Zach that like it's sort of like a Hollywood movie about like a country music star who's like, you know, it's quite romantic, but it's got these sad points where he's like chucked out by the wife. He's in a bar fight and he ends up living in a trailer. And I mean, I think literally all those things do happen to John Daly. But like, I don't know, it's quite a like specific kind of like sad, but romantic tale.
Definitely. And there'll be a few people here who are listening who think, well, I don't really know a great deal about John Daly. You guys are obviously going to go into that. But I will just start it off by saying he is and was, you know, a really impressive golfer, you know, a two-time major winner. That doesn't happen very often, you know, to be two majors in whilst all this chaos is going on in the background is pretty remarkable. And in America, incredibly famous. You know, he's one of those rare people who is, you know, stupidly famous in a global setting sports-wise in America, but quite hasn't really, you know, become a household name in Europe and elsewhere. And yeah, amazingly talented golfer. I think one of the most naturally gifted players ever, which we'll come on to. You'll see exactly what we mean. He just fully abuses that, which I fucking love, by the way. Somebody who knows her way better naturally than anybody else that they're playing with at the highest level of golf. And he just takes the piss with it. And yeah, that's amazing.
That's a great introduction. Right, should we get into it then, Zach? Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so John Daly had a, as you might imagine, pretty unorthodox childhood. He says that he began drinking at the age of 8.
Well,
which explains a lot. Yeah. He moved a lot around when he was growing up, but by the age of 13, he'd picked up golf. He was playing at the local course, which is called Locust Grove. He says that he beat every single male member of the club, and then they banned kids. He also, during this time, developed a pretty voracious appetite for fast food. And by the time he arrived at college, he weighed 235 pounds, which is about 17 stone. And he was there like on a golf scholarship. So he had his like first meeting with the coach, and the coach is a bit like, Jesus, mate, I think you need to lose some weight. So you think he might prepare like a little diet plan and get him on the treadmill. Instead, his advice is to take up smoking. So during his time at college, John develops a 40-a-day habit. It does work though. He sheds 70 pounds while he's at college, and he says that he was living on Jack Daniels and popcorn.
And cigs.
And cigs.
I mean, that is like 5 stone he's dropped. That is seriously impressive.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, they don't tell you about that on the Stephen Bartlett podcast, do they?
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
Give me 40 days.
Get on the ciggies and some fucking butter kiss.
There was a quote from him for the time. He said, "I don't eat beans, spinach, broccoli, or any of that stuff. Most people will be drunk for a month based on what I had for dinner." Like a lot of college students as well, he has a little side hustle for making money. And his route to a bit of cash is betting blokes at his local golf course $100 a hole that he can beat them. So he basically rocks up and they take one look at him as just this fat kid, and they're like, $100, yeah, let's do it. And he just absolutely rinses everybody at the club.
$2,000 a game.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But he never at this stage quite makes the grade to be allowed onto like the PGA tour. So he's sort of touring these minor tournaments until 1991, when he gets a late call up to the PGA Championship. So he was 9th on the list of reserve, so you don't think you're going to make it on. But just on the eve of the tournament, one of the players pulls out, his wife's about to give birth, and the organisers are desperately ringing around everybody on the reserve list. Nobody can make it. So he's 9th on the list. So he's the last one on the list. And they eventually get down to him and he's like, yeah, okay, I'll make it. So he jumps in the car with a mate of his and they drive through the night. He's like hungover on the back seat, and they arrive at the course on the first morning of the tournament, and there's no time for him to practice at all. Gets out of the car and tees off, and he wins the tournament incredibly. And yeah, the fans go wild really, because it's this unknown like chubby blonde kid chuffing on cigarettes as he's walking around, just wins the tournament.
And he's like a big hitter. That's his style, isn't it?
Again, really? That's the thing. So he's like, he's hitting it a long way. You know, this is in the post-Tiger era where we're used to these big, long tee shots that actually, if you play a little bit of golf yourself, you still don't think that you can hit those shots. This is when it was all, you know, plaited trousers, you know, little sort of nice hats on, all very polite, nice, gentle, smooth tempoed golf swings. Lots of country club guys as well. You know, the guys who grew up with the posh courses in America. And then this guy turns up and like you say, Zach, he's got, you know, a bit of a mullet going on, the blonde hair, puffing on the cigs the way, and also just hits it miles, like long, long way. This is 300 yard drives where nobody hit 300 yard drives, and it was on the regular. And it's this freakish natural talent that he just gripped it and ripped it, which was his phrase, you know.
Love that.
And he coined that phrase, and that was it, you know. And the American fans, that they're always wanting this kind of maverick figure, and he provided just that. It was brilliant. So he stands there, he's hitting it miles, he's not been to bed before the first round, he's not seen the course, he's puffing on cigs, and even walking up the 18th hole, he was caught on the cameras going up to one of the spectators and taking a beer out of their hand and swigging it up the 18th. And it's great. The footage of that on YouTube, you can hear the commentators, these two Americans, and they're just a little bit square, you know, like the classic, well, this is Daly here. And you can tell they're not very happy. They're establishment type figures in the commentary box. And they spot this beer in his hand and they say, well, I'm not quite sure that's the H2O. As he's about to win this major championship as a relative unknown. It's actually film worthy. You could make a film out of that story, couldn't you?
We'll put a link to that in the notes.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, definitely do that on YouTube. It's very, very good. But he's incredible. Yeah, that is the biggest story, you know, to win a major, one of the four golfing majors, as a reserve who's never played much at that top level before, to completely obliterate everyone with that lack of preparation is a serious story. It's amazing. It's probably the best thing that could have happened to him. It may also be the worst. We'll let you be the judge of that.
Yeah, I mean, well, he says that after that point, he says everything was great. The cash poured in like a cow pissing on a flat rock.
So that's a good quote.
Yeah, he goes on the cover of Sports Illustrated. The fans absolutely love him. There's another incident from that tournament. So it's a bit tragic, actually. A fan gets struck by lightning and dies. And John Daly donates 30 grand of his winnings from the tournament to this guy's daughter's college fund. So everybody loves him from that. Everyone wants a piece of John Daly. He's interviewed on all the big talk shows and everything. After the tournament, he gets given this gold Rolex watch that's engraved saying PGA winner. And at another tournament a few weeks later, a fan compliments him on his watch and he's just like, hey, you like it? Have it. Just takes it off and just gives this guy like a 30 grand Rolex.
Oh my God.
Nice. So he's just like, I don't know, he's living the dream really.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know, it kind of kicks off a bit of a bender, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'd call it the mother of all boozing streaks that takes place. I guess, you know, John Daly's peak is from this PGA win in 91 until the late 90s, basically. And during this peak, he's boozing hard for most of it. So he says that he was drinking at this point 35 to 40 beers a day and then a couple of bottles of whiskey as well. So, I mean, that's
insane.
Serious numbers. And he says, I'd be partying till 7:30 a.m. when I had an 8:05 a.m. tea time in a PGA event. So literally just goes from the bender, changes, and just turns up and tees off. And he said, I wouldn't sober up until the 13th hole. I mean, he's just playing smashed, basically, and playing pretty well. I mean, he's one of those characters who, particularly at the beginning, booze relieves a lot of the anxiety and pressure, right? And so it enables him to play well. Off the course, it does cause a few problems. So between 1989 and 93, he's hospitalised 5 times with alcohol poisoning.
I mean, that is ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. One time he says, I woke up and a nurse told me I'd been dead for 9 seconds. And he says, my blood alcohol level was 3.7. So I've been looking up blood alcohol levels because it seems like they're always measured in percentage. I couldn't find any other unit, so I assume he means 3.7%. The drink drive limit is 0.08%. And apparently alcohol poisoning usually occurs at 0.4% when people often go into a coma. So I can't believe that he's 9 times that level, but
you never know.
He did say, this is a direct quote, he said, the nurse said they'd never seen anything like it. So, and he's a big guy.
Yeah.
He could possibly have done that.
3.7% alcohol running through your veins. Yeah, you probably get drunk from drinking his blood.
It's like a beer, isn't it? It's like about the same strength as a beer.
Yeah, that's crazy.
God, I wonder if he ever tried that. Probably.
Probably.
But I mean, fans are loving him at this stage, right? He's this big hitter, he's this wild, colourful character. But, you know, what was initially an off-course drinking problem starts to become a problem on the course as well. His behaviour gets more and more reckless. So there's an incident where he deliberately starts hitting balls over fans' heads, which he gets a warning for. He starts like quitting mid-round when he's not performing. There's a game in 94 against a young Tiger Woods where Daly just stays up all night boozing. And then the next day proceeds to just beat Tiger, and Tiger's like shaking his head. You know, he'd just been in the gym. This is pre-Tiger Woods' extracurricular activities that
would when Tiger was whiter than white, you know. That didn't last very long.
I think even then Tiger was doing a bit of the shagging and gambling, but anyway, not a drinker so much. John himself is doing quite a lot of shagging. He's, you know, he's deluged by strippers and groupies and girls who want him to sign their boobs. He says in his memoir, look, if you think about sex as much as I do, it can get tough out there in a golf tournament. You got good-looking women all over the place. Some of them take off their underpants and sit around the greens and lash you when you come up to putt. Women are always coming up to you in the parking lot and asking you to sign their boobs. What does lash you mean? So he said they take off their underpants, sit around the greens and lash you when you come up to putt. Does that mean like whip you with their pants?
I mean, maybe.
I think it does.
It must be, yeah.
Like whip you on the arse.
I'll be honest. Since I've been commentating on golf, I've not seen much of that happening.
Also, sitting around the green. I mean, what's sitting on the green?
I mean, fucking hell. I mean, maybe just waiting for him to arrive. And I mean, who knows with John Daly? Who knows?
Apparently, there are some tournaments where there are women waiting on the greens who take them into the bushes and give the players blowjobs.
Where's that from?
Well, I don't want to do too much spoiler, but it's from someone who's going to crop up in the story a lot.
Okay.
Who writes a book about experiences with John Daly.
Well, in which case, then we'll take that at face value.
Although what I would say is she has some paranoia and jealousy in her outlook. But, Greggy, where are these groupies? Is this a thing now?
You know what? You do get more of a young female presence at golf tournaments in America than you would think. Mm. I'm not going to speculate on the reasons why. I think quite often they're trying to catch the eye of golfers. And it works invariably,
but then that still happens. Whipping them with their underwear.
No, I think they're a little bit more discreet than.
Back a bit to a like of this sort of like MTV generation era where like golfers are sort of like, you know, posing with strippers and the signing boobs is such a sort of like iconic thing of that era.
It's a bit Happy Gilmore-esque, you know. They're a bit kind of rock star-y because they're not really taking themselves or being taken too seriously. So I think Daly kind of gets away with it in that era where it's kind of just evolving into where Tiger's talking about how many weights he's lifting in the gym. And he's there, obviously, like massive two fingers up to that. Yeah. But people love that.
Those groupies must have been over the moon when he rocked up as well. So they're used to just these like middle-aged blokes in felt trousers and flat caps.
Yeah, and diamond sweaters.
Yeah.
And then Daly rocks up with his shirt untucked and a fag on. Exactly. That's the thing. You know, he was an exciting figure. And like, even though I was perhaps a little bit too young to remember him in his proper pomp, I remember him still playing in majors and stuff when I was, you know, attending them. When he'd come to the Open, for example, you know, one of the players to tick off the list in terms of somebody you wanted to see at least hit a shot or interact with the crowd a bit was John Daly.
Yeah.
And it still remains like that now. You know, the guy's in his 60s now and he's exactly the same.
Yeah, he pulls a big crowd. And I think even then, you know, a lot of these like cash cow tournaments he probably played in were just people who just wanted to bring in the fans for that.
Too right.
Maybe the rules were a bit more lax there in terms of nudity, sexual exploits in the bushes. However, at the World Series of Golf, having already had a pretty wild 93-94 season, Daly finally goes too far. So Jeff Roth, a fellow pro, is in the group in front of him and they're playing a little bit slowly. And eventually John's had enough and he starts hitting balls just onto them, which, you know, could have killed them. It's definitely not considered good course etiquette. And Roth gets really angry and confronts him. And at some point, Roth's dad marches over as well. And John wrestles him to the ground. And then there's this scene, apparently, where, you know, there's thousands of spectators, where they're just like wrestling on the ground like a couple of pigs in shit. and this does not go down well with the PGA, who ban John for the rest of the season and fine him $13,000, which is, you know, chump change to him. But, you know, the ban's a serious thing.
The ban's serious, yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of capped off. He's had this series of incidents on and off the course where they're disapproving, and this is the final straw. So his ban actually does create a bit of a turning point for John. He goes into rehab, and he gets clean. He quits the booze. I should say, like, he says he's the type of alcoholic who, he can have these long periods of not drinking, but then he binges, and a binge can last several months. So, you know, he's drinking a lot. But he gets sober thanks to rehab. And in rehab, the counsellors advise him, they're like, look, John, you need to find something that you love in the way that you love boozing. And apparently everyone there is hoping he's going to be like, it's golf. Golf is what I love. But actually, he chooses food and gambling. So first of all, food. According to his memoirs, at this peak of his eating, Daly would consume all of this every single day. He would make three or four trips to McDonald's. Quote, I used to be able to eat two Big Macs, two or three cheeseburgers, chocolate shake, regular Coke. Back then, all in a sitting pretty easily. So that's one sitting. Burger King, Taco Bell, 4 to 6 packs of M&Ms, peanut M&Ms, loved them. Multiple packs of chocolate muffins, chocolate ice cream, 12 to 20 Diet Cokes, over 40 cigarettes, but no water. He said, I don't drink water. I hate water. I cannot stand to drink water.
It's no ridiculous, water. That, isn't it?
I saw there's another quote from him. He said the only water that he drinks is the ice cubes in his Diet Coke. So even just the Diet Cokes, like 20 Diet Cokes a day.
I mean, what is that doing?
You've got to sleep as well, so it's like 2 per waking hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot. That is fucking
ridiculous. A lot of caffeine as well. I don't know if you have many waking hours if you drink that much point. Diet Coke.
Yeah, I mean, that is a hell of a haul.
But no, but hey, you know, no booze.
No booze.
Yeah, no booze.
For that period.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some displacement. There's probably a lot of calories in booze anyway that are now freed up. For M&M's and Taco Bell.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So anyway, yeah, he's piling on the pounds from this mental intake. The gambling is also pretty unhinged. So John Daly estimates that in his life, he has lost $55 million gambling. Mental. But yeah, he says, I've played slots for 2 days in a row. I've played blackjack for 2 days, one sitting, only getting up to use the bathroom. And it's mainly slot machines, $5,000 a spin. On a fucking slot machine.
That is crackers.
220 grand blackjack hands. So just wild stuff. But don't feel too sorry for him because he says, I had a lot of fun doing it. And actually, he's quite like sanguine about it. People always want to say like, oh, this must be awful. And he's like, yeah, I should probably regret it. But it's just sort of part of the story, part of the ride. I'm not convinced he's a guy who like money does that much for him. Like he's one of these guys, he doesn't really value money that much. He's always like handing it out and paying for other people, giving them his Rolex, losing it in slot machines. But he's also always just like having to earn more money by kind of going out there and doing another tournament. I mean, we've done an episode on Dennis Rodman. There's quite a big parallel in that respect.
Yeah.
Money, it doesn't do
that. You have a story about his generosity,
right? I do actually. Yeah. So I remember being at a golf tournament back in 2014 up in Scotland where, going back to your point about him needing to earn money, he was definitely there as a sponsor's invitation. So at this point, way over the hill in terms of his actual golfing ability, but still drawing big crowds, particularly in Scotland, they have this great affinity for him because he always talks about how the best golf courses in the world are in Scotland and this kind of thing. So he's being paid an absolute shitload to turn up at what was a match play tournament. So realistically, he was probably only going to play one or two matches. I think he might have got through the first round. Loses his second round match, not a problem. I'm there with a mate of mine who was a player playing that week, and we got one of the players' courtesy cards, taking us back to where we were staying, which was in the Travel Lodge in Aberdeen. Glamour, right? Daily, obviously on a huge check just to even be there for the week. And then obviously having already earned a little bit of money for winning his first round match. He's staying in some fancy hotel, probably the best hotel in Aberdeen. And the courtesy car was probably only meant to take one player and, you know, a wife or a mate or whatever back to the hotel. And it's about to drive off and the front door handle gets pulled and John Daly gets in the front seat. So me and my pal are sat in the back and we're like, this is cool, here it is. And he leans over, he's like, hey, I'm John. Nice to meet you. Well, this is great. You know, first time meeting John Daly. I'm sat in the back of this car. He's sat in the passenger seat. Not only does he plug his iPhone in, he says, you got an aux cable? Starts playing country and western. You think I'm making this up, by the way. It's absolutely true. And then as he gets out, bear in mind, it's a free courtesy car laid on by the tournament sponsors to take the players and caddies and stuff back to the hotels nearby. He leans over to the driver and gives him a rubber band with about $500 or $600 wrapped up in it. And it was dollars, which was, you know, a bit annoying because he's going to have to go to the bureau to change to get changed. But still.
Greenbacks.
It's a great, but he said, sorry, the greens, but have that one, right?
That's just the tip.
That's what he said. Just a tip for driving him 15 minutes to his hotel.
Hero.
Unreal. Which I thought was really, really cool. You know, if you're going to meet John Daly,
That's a hell of a meeting.
You want him to see, you know, we were in the car for 10 or 15 minutes. The conversation was bang average because he was so engrossed in his country and Western and then leafed off about $500, which was great. You know, if I never saw him ever again, that would have been that's the one.
Amazing. A lot of these stories are generosity. He's just a guy who's just like, yeah, fuck it. Money's around. Have some. Mm. I think he pays out quite a lot to his ex-wives as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Gets married a few times. More on that later. Speaking of his affinity with Scotland, the 1995 Open rolls around at St Andrews, and this proves to be another key moment in his career. John arrives at the tournament. He's sober still from his rehab stint. He's playing well, but he does also owe casinos $4 million. He's in the hole at this point, and you know, not got much to his name at this point. So he could really use a win, and lo and behold, he does. It goes all the way to a playoff. This tight finish with Constantina Rocca, and Daly prevails in this famous playoff. And I guess it's less of a shock than the PGA win in 91, where he's like come from nowhere. But still, given his story up to then, which is this like, you know, drinking problem, this ban, to have this redemption story at the most famous course in the world at St Andrews is really something. And for John, it also bails him out of his serious casino debt. So I think you get probably like $500,000 for winning the tournament.
In those days, probably about $500,000, yeah.
But he gets $30 million from Wilson in a sponsorship deal.
Wow.
And presumably a lot of other sponsorship deals on top of that. So he can pay off all the casino debts and then some. And there's quite a good story. So apparently throughout the Open win, he was eating 9 chocolate chip muffins per day. and then after his win, the president, Bill Clinton, who's a, you know, fellow, Clinton's from Arkansas, and John's kind of from Arkansas, he lived there for a while, he phones him to say well done, and you know, for anyone, this might be an amazing moment, but John just refuses to take the call and says, no, I want to eat dinner, and then he goes, besides, I didn't even vote for the guy.
I think we do know who we voted for, by the way.
Yeah, because he's a big Republican,
massive Republican, and this is unreal. Some people might have seen this from when Donald Trump was president on social media going round, but there's a remarkable exchange that is captured on camera where Trump is basically ringing John Daly up. Daly's sat in a diner somewhere. He's scoffing on some burger and chips, and he's put the phone on the table and he's got Trump on loudspeaker, and Trump is just moaning to him about foreign policy and Vladimir Putin. It's a remarkable clip.
Let's watch it.
He was a friend of mine. I got along great with him. I say, Vladimir, if you do it, we're hitting Moscow. I said, we're going to hit Moscow. And he sort of believed me, like 5%, 10%. That's all you need. He never did it during my time, John, you know.
No.
We're all talking about it.
It's funny how she didn't bother you either.
Yeah, no, she didn't bother me. I told him the same thing.
Unreal.
I mean, it's literally Daly's sitting in the diner and Donald Trump's telling him that Putin is his friend and he told him, if you invade Ukraine, I'll nuke Moscow.
I will nuke Moscow.
I mean, that is...
It's amazing, isn't it? And Daly, obviously such a big fan of Trump, says, hey, isn't it amazing that Xi Jinping didn't bother you either when you were president? I mean, absolutely fucking bonkers.
Also, Daly looks so like nonplussed. He's like still eating. It's just like, it's like it's a normal fucking
president on the phone.
You know, he's like a sort of an informal advisor to to President Trump.
It's such a crazy insight into the Trump presidency, actually, just that clip. So, like, because I mean, we've obviously had this whole like WhatsApp scandal in British politics of, you know, these WhatsApps that disappeared and also just like MPs or whoever communicating without there being any sort of paper trail.
Yeah.
But this is like the president of the US threatening to nuke Russia just on the phone to like a golfer.
An alcoholic golfer.
Sat in a diner on speakerphone.
FaceTiming the two-time major winning golfer, John Daly, who asked him to a trailer somewhere. Like,
this is one for speakerphone. Because Daly can't be asked to hold it to his ear, basically. Yeah.
Or even go outside, you know. Incredible.
That's amazing. Well, back in 1995, he turns down Bill Clinton's overtures. And this huge sponsor deal, it pays off his casino debts. Unfortunately, I think maybe it's the money, maybe it's the glory of this second major win, but it sends John spiraling again, and he's not staying sober. And more incidents creep up. So in 97, he trashes a hotel room, very famously. It's an incident that John describes as that time I fell through that door. So I don't know what actually happened. Clearly a door got broken. I mean, it's quite a lot of weight to put through a door. And that incident costs him the $30 million contract. So I don't know how much of it he'd already been paid.
Wow.
He's then offered $3 million by another sponsor if he stops drinking, and he just says, nah, I'm good, and takes a swig of his drink, apparently, at the time.
Wow.
So he's fully committed to the boozing. The golf, I mean, really, to be honest, his golfing never quite recovers from this spell.
No.
But it's going pretty badly. There's an incident in 98 at a tournament where he hits six shots in a row into the water.
Yeah.
Apparently, after the sixth one, he just throws his club in two and walks off. Yeah. Cards 18 for the hole.
Which is still a record, by the way. I was commentating on that event a couple of weeks back at Arnold Palmer's golf course at Bay Hill. And there was a player who'd made a 12. There was another player who made a 10 on that hole. But obviously, the highlight came out of Daly just repeatedly hitting balls, trying to carry this water on this super aggressive line, and clearly thinking, yeah, we're done here.
So that's why, because it was
big water hole. And basically, he was trying to, the crowd were egging him on a little bit, you know, and he panders to this quite a bit in later years when he's past the peak of his powers. But the crowd are saying, keep going for it. And he just kept basically tanking these balls into the water. Brilliant.
Love it. I love the club going in with it.
Yeah, exactly. The caddy must be tearing his hair out. No, please. Yeah.
So even then, even though the results aren't quite the same, he's still got this box office style.
You think with such a chaotic lifestyle, what somebody like John Daly could do with is settling down, finding a nice wife, you know, have a stable family home where you can raise some kids. Fortunately, it doesn't quite pan out like that. So in 2001, he marries his fourth wife, Cherie Miller. They don't seem to stick around long, weirdly. He meets Cherie while he's engaged to another woman, actually.
Okay.
So she's also not very happy. But they get married after 7 weeks. So John says he concedes that he didn't know Cherie well enough to exchange Christmas cards, much less conceive a child with her. But that's exactly what happens. They welcome the imaginatively named John Daly II.
Little John Daly. He's a pretty handy golfer himself.
He's a handy player. Yeah, he's good. I think, strangely, he is also at the University of Arkansas, where his old man was.
Could he be a pro, is it?
Certainly, yeah. I think he's like quite a seriously good college player. I'm not quite sure he's living life exactly like his dad, but if you see a picture of him, I don't think there's too many.
He's sponsored by Hooters, him and his dad.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Great sponsorship. That's great. Yeah.
So the night before his John Daly's wedding to Cherie, he spends in the casino, as you might expect. He actually wins $850,000 on the slot machines.
Wow.
Which, you know, maybe it's a good omen.
Is it?
His luck's in. I mean, I didn't realise that slot machines you could put $5,000 in. That makes a little bit more sense, because I was imagining him being there with like putting in $2 each time.
Yeah, I thought it was a quid.
So he must be feeling pretty lucky, but I don't think his time in the casino is too popular with Cherie. So shortly after they're married, he has another big stint in the casino, and she's like trying to get him out. He actually wins $55,000, but they're driving back home and this big argument kicks off, like she's really giving me an earful. And at some point he just loses it, grabs the cash and throws it out of the moving car window off the edge of a bridge, $55,000 in cash. And
wonder if anyone collected that.
She did. She went, well, she tried to. She tried to go and find it as much as she could afterwards. I don't know how much she managed. But yeah, I think she's slightly losing patience with it.
It's pretty rock and roll of him, I'll give him that.
Yeah. If anything, it's a great story.
Yeah.
I guess I could just imagine him just being like, well, if you don't want it, then fuck
it.
She also gets pretty jealous. And we kind of touched on these stories earlier that he gets a lot of attention from other women around the course. Like he'll be walking around and this girl's flashing him and giving him their numbers and stuff like that. And she really doesn't like this. So one time she catches him watching a women's boxing match in a bar and comes in, punches him in the back of the head and says, if you want to see women fight, you pick any woman in this club and I'll go beat her right now.
She sounds like a charming lady.
Quite mental. Another time she attacks three strippers at a charity golf event. So I don't know what kind of charity event this is.
I was going to say, I don't play many of those on a Friday afternoon. Yeah.
she said, she was like, well, I did try to choke one of the girls, but she shouldn't have been naked in front of me like that.
Wow, she's jealous.
Very jealous, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I think he's no saint.
I think you kind of know what you're signing up for when you marry John Daly, right? You know?
Yeah. She's written a book where she kind of says, I haven't read it, but she kind of says, like, you don't know, you think it's all going to be nice and chill. But I mean, I don't know. She's pretty insane.
Yeah, she actually has bigger problems coming, because in 2003, Cherie and her parents are convicted of drug dealing and money laundering. They launder $1.2 million for a drugs gang. And John gives an interview around the time of the trial and he says, I'm standing by Cherie, but if she's gone to prison for 20 years, I'll have to divorce her. She's like, I'm not sure that is standing by her.
No, not at all.
In the end, her dad gets 2 years in jail. Cherie gets 6 months house arrest, which I think in John's eyes, probably worse.
Yeah, he'd have taken 2 years, would he? Get her out of here for 2 years. Yeah.
But you said about her memoirs, and she does say that he's no saint as well. So this one time, John gets back home, and I think he's been away on tour or something, and Cherie's decided to do a bit of decorating, and he just walks in the door. It's like, what the fuck is this? He doesn't like the colour and just pisses all over the walls of the house. Which, it's like, you could just repaint.
Yeah. Not Isn't quite his necessary. Mum present as well?
Yeah, his mum is there as well. Another time she catches John in bed with another woman and also finds these like X-rated photos on his phone that she sent to him. She then somehow manages to get hold of this woman's phone. I don't know how. Maybe she like legged it out of the house and left her phone. So Cherie gets these nudes and sends it to every contact on her phone, including like her parents, her boss.
Oh my God.
And with the message, this is the vagina of the woman I just found in bed with my husband.
Oh, wow.
Although if you're her mum and you receive that, you might think the message is from your daughter. As in, it's like the daughter's saying, I've just found this. I mean, you think your daughter's gone insane.
Yeah. Yeah, true, true. I guess if it is from that number.
I'm just trying to think how confusing. I would
spin it. Anyway. Yeah.
Either way, I'm pretty sure that's illegal.
Yeah, it's pretty damaging.
So unsurprisingly, in 2007, they split up. But surprisingly, they decide to carry on living together, which sounds like...
For the kids.
For little John.
For little John, maybe.
But it's a recipe for disaster. And later that year, John turns up to a tournament with cuts all over his face, and they ask him what's up, and he claims that Cherie had attacked him with a steak knife while he was asleep.
Jesus which Christ. Is mental as well, right?
Yeah, he's got like big gashes on his face. So after that incident, I think it's about time you got your own place. But the story isn't over, because she then finds out that John has been shagging his caddy, who also happens to be a promotions manager at his local Hooters. And she sues the caddy. She says that there's something like she's responsible for the loss of affection and closeness in her relationship with John, which personally I would have put down to the moment she attacked him
with a steak knife.
While he was sleeping. But, you know.
Can you sue someone?
In America, by the way, it's great for that, isn't it? You can sue anybody for anything.
Yeah. Also, it's like Mississippi or something. I feel like, what law is that? Something from the Bible. Covet a neighbour's wife or something. Yeah, it's some like old Testament shit that she's got her for.
Yeah.
So by the turn of the millennium, he's still only 35, but he's basically a spent force as a top golfer, right? He's still very much on the partying, but, you know, when it comes to the big tournaments, it's not going that well. 2003, he misses the cut at Augusta at the Masters, and he heads to a local strip club to sort of drown his sorrows, racks up a 27 grand bar bill, and is preparing to pay this bill when a punter, random punter behind him, just like, oh, no, I'll get that. And John's like, no, trust me, you don't want to get this tab. It's huge. And the guy's like, nah, let me see. Sees the $27,000 and is just like, yeah, I'll get that, and just plops his Amex on it.
Wow.
And gets it for John, who's just like, okay, you must be some wealthy local. I guess that generosity.
Yeah, you know, what goes around comes around.
Yeah, a bit of karma.
Yeah, too right.
Hopefully that's not too, that rule's not too true. His gambling is still out of control. 2005, he plays a tournament in which he comes second to Tiger Woods, pockets about $500,000, but then goes and loses it on the slots and ends up losing $1.65 million in 5 hours.
It's incredible, that, isn't it? Mm. Wow. Yeah,
that's mental. And then in 2008, he has another year, a bit like 1994, where everything gets really out of hand. So it starts off, he's playing a practice round in this tournament and it's boiling hot. It's like 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And a journalist is watching John to see his intake, and he's carefully noting it all down. And the final total is 21 cigs, 12 Diet Cokes, 6 packs of peanut M&Ms, and 0.0 ounces of water. So he's still doing his thing. After that tournament, there's a local news interview with him, and they're like, okay, and we're going live now, and we're interviewing John Daly. It's like on regional news. So you're expecting just a pretty standard interview. And there's John just topless with no shoes on, just hitting balls while he talks to the reporter. The PGA Tour are getting a bit upset at these incidents because, again, they're quite buttoned up and it's all a little bit out of hand. Then there's a pro amateur tournament where John, before hitting the first tee shot, decides to tee off a ball off a beer can and then swig it, which they really don't like. There's an incident in Australia where he throws his club in the water and walks off the course. And then things come to a head when John is having a night out at, where else, Hooters, his favourite joint, and he gets far too smashed and he's arrested outside. So what actually happened, it's a little bit hazy, and I'm sure John himself can't remember, but they bang him up. They say it's for his own good. And his mugshot is then published because it's America. So you've got that iconic pic of him in the jumpsuit. Hooters actually framed the picture and put it on the wall. And apparently it's still up there.
Class.
I quite like. Apparently there's a Hooters in Nottingham.
There is, by the way. It's the only one in the UK.
And you answered that quite quickly. Answered that very quickly.
Yeah, move on.
Maybe we'll do a live show from there at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, this arrest is the final straw for the PGA, who ban him for 6 months. The second time they're giving him a big ban. Actually, around this time, they publish a full list of all his misdemeanors they've ever punished him for, and it's 456 pages long.
Wow.
It's really great.
Get that on the wall of Hooters.
Yeah. I'd like to get a copy of that. Yeah. Anyway, actually, once again, having a major slap on the wrist seems to make him turn a corner. I don't think he goes to rehab, but he seems to get the drinking under control a bit.
As for Cherie, do you want to know what Cherie's been up to?
Yeah, I do actually.
So in 2015, Cherie was prosecuted for, basically she caught her new boyfriend with nudes that another woman had sent him, and she posted them on Facebook.
Mm.
So she got convicted, I think, for that. And 2 months later, she then broke into this guy's house and attacked him with a golf club while he was asleep in bed. Wow. It's quite a lot of parallels between her two relationships here.
Is that her calling card? Wait till they're asleep and then hit them with an attack.
Yeah. Them within a weapon.
So apparently he then got up and sort of managed to get the golf club off her and shepherded her out of the house. She was like, please fuck off. It's like 2 a.m. And she then grabbed a security sign. I think one of those, that has like a picture of a security camera on it, and started attacking him with that instead.
Oh my God.
Pretty crazy. So, I might read her book. It sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Wasn't also Tiger Woods' wife, Fairly, she hit him with a golf club when she found out.
That's right. Feeling. I think he's quite a natural piece of justice, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't knock you about then.
Yeah. You've got a lot of golf clubs. And John Daly probably had a lot of steak knives, to be fair. Certainly used a lot. Around the mid-noughties is also where Daly starts doing all these stunts. I guess it's because social media gets big, so they all pop up. So there's those videos of him hitting the balls out of people's mouths. Mm-hmm. So like you're literally lying on your back with a tee in your mouth and a ball on it, and John Daly is gripping and ripping.
Yeah, exactly.
25 beers deep, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
He does it at one point. He does it with a blonde model who's a friend of Sherry's, and that one goes quite viral because it's this sort of attractive woman, and Playboy see it and they decide to copy the stunt. So they get this like famous sort of radio host shock jock, and he tries to tee off this Playboy model's bum. So he puts the tee, I guess, sort of like between the cheeks. We're looking at a picture of it here, and he goes to hit it and he just collides with her ass, mishits it. And it's worth Googling this picture. The bruise on her ass is massive.
Oh my God. Yeah,
as it would be if a fucking driver connected with your ass.
Wow.
She sues for 500 grand. So.
Jesus.
I'd probably take a driver to the ass for 500 grand.
I would actually. Yeah.
Surely that's sort of part of the risk you sign up for when you agree to let somebody do that.
Yeah, they should have signed a waiver.
But you can then sue.
It's America. Yeah. and then there's the other video of John hitting balls onto the motorway.
Yeah. I saw that the other week, actually.
Yeah, it's quite recent. I think it's the last couple of years. He's like barefoot, obviously, cig in mouth, and he's just hitting balls quite low over a freeway where there's all these cars. Like, if that hits you, are you dead?
Probably. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, but
he used to take aim over the spectators, though, as you talked about, you know, and do that, you know, because he obviously hit it further than all the other players. So they're aiming it sort of into the nice, safe part of the fairway. And he was like, sod this, I'm going to try and hit it over the corner of the trees. And he would literally aim it and whistle these golf balls at electrifying speed, you know, where if it hit you on the head, I mean, you're
dead.
Yeah, it's brown bread time. And he's like fizzing it over the top of him. And he'd do that. And he's never, you know, touch wood, fingers crossed for John Daly. He's never had a problem so far. So there you go.
I sort of think if the golf fans are watching, at least they can duck. Whereas if you're just fucking driving your kids to soccer practice.
Yeah, the golf ball lands on the middle of the motorway. Yeah, there's a bit of a problem there. Yeah.
Anyway, he got away with it. Of course, John is releasing his music albums. He's he's a fantastic singer and guitarist. Should we have a listen?
Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
He's in his Stars and Stripes suit jacket as well.
Starting to see why all these women are throwing themselves at him.
I bet he's very charismatic in his own way. I mean, like, it's weird. You don't see him smile that much publicly, do you?
No.
He's quite gruff.
Yeah, definitely.
But he's a super talented wild thing.
Yeah, correct.
And that is—he does have his own. He writes his own songs. He's released two studio albums, and there's a track called "Whiskey and Water" that's worth a listen.
Okay, that's definitely one for
more
the way
whiskey
home.
Than water, I think.
Yeah. That is ironic, actually, considering the bloke has never drunk water in his life.
I wonder if he's drinking it now, because he does say his Diet Coke addiction. He said, "I used to have 26 to 28 cans a day. Now I have 10 to 12 at the most."
Oh,
he's kind of got
fine.
That under control. Yeah. Apparently the gambling now, it's only $25
slots. Under control.
Oh, really?
Just 10 to 12. It's very much under control.
What's they hit his teeth in?
Yeah. Oh, it must be in a real pickle. Yeah.
They look all right, don't they? So, and the other thing he's been doing recently is lobbying LIV Golf to pick him up. Obviously, the Saudi LIV Golf League is big bucks, so you can see why he might want to do it. I can see why the Saudis might have turned down the opportunity for a barefoot, topless John Daly to drunkenly stumble onto the course.
Too right. He's very LIV Golf, though, isn't he? Yeah, he's very, like, from that brand of, you know, I can imagine him playing in a couple of the pro-ams or something, playing with his good friend Donald, perhaps.
And Kid Rock, he's good mates with as well.
Yeah, too right.
I think for the Saudis, even though he would be perfect for LIV Golf, he's a fan draw, it's probably just not quite compatible enough with the Hadiths.
Yeah, exactly.
It's vibe. In 2019, there was still time for one big drama when John went on holiday in England, which was probably his first mistake, and he got bitten by a brown recluse spider, which, I mean, I don't think I've ever been bitten by a spider in England, but you wouldn't think much of it, and nor did he. But this was very nearly the end for John after all his escapades. This was nearly it, because he flew back to America and this turned out to be a poisonous bite that got infected, and he got sepsis. And he said he suddenly basically passed out, and they were giving him mouth to mouth and CPR. And he said, I thought that was it.
God.
He was rushed to hospital and nearly died.
I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yeah, Apparently it was really, really bad.
I mean, when you've done all the things that he's done, as we've discussed, and you consume the things he's consumed for as long as he has, imagine a fucking spider in England.
In Blackpool. I didn't realise we had any spiders that could do that to you.
Yeah, me neither. Maybe it came in his luggage from wherever he'd been previously.
Yeah, too right. You know what? If you want to find John Daly these days, you can, if you are lucky enough to go to the Masters, or indeed Augusta, Georgia, where Augusta National obviously is hosting the Masters every April. The world's, you know, golfing media and, you know, the very best players in the world all descend on this tiny little sort of kind of hillbilly town. I'll be honest, you know, the golf course is amazing, as you'll have seen on the TV down the years. The town, less so. Mm. But John Daly, despite having not competed at the Masters for nearly 20 years now, still turns up every year, doesn't go in the ground at Augusta National. That would be way too kind of stiff upper lip for him. But parks his big motorhome trailer in the car park of Hooters and sells merchandise, and you can go and have a beer with him, and he plays his guitar and all that kind of stuff. And he just does it and sits there. The first time I went to the Masters, I couldn't believe it. You're just driving down George Washington Drive towards the golf course, and there's a big sign up, John Daly's here, and he's selling all his merchandise, and you can go and sort of have your photo with him and have a beer. And honestly, the clientele in the state of Georgia is perfect for John Daly because they love him. That's where he resides every Masters week.
I love that Augusta still has a Hooters, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Is that like the definition of a town is something that has a church in America? It doesn't have a Hooters.
There are about 30 churches in this population town of about 100,000. Yeah, it's crazy.
Do you get to lash him with knickers?
I think upon request. Extra, yeah. Potentially, yeah.
He says he doesn't sign boobs anymore.
Just make sure Cherie's not around.
Yeah. You might get a steak knife to the face.
Yeah, exactly.
What a life.
What a life.
It seems to be, it's tempting to talk about the sad elements to this. Anyone with a drinking and a gambling problem is sad, but he just always seems to be enjoying it.
You see clips doing the rounds on social media near enough weekly where he's playing in some golf day with a load of rich fellas who are quite happy to have his company for 4 or 5 hours, swigging a beer, hitting some shots, cracking jokes. A lot of them unbroadcastable, even on the upshot. And actually, he just seems to really enjoy himself. And he still has actually a great reputation in the game. You know, a lot of like the top guys, you know, even people like Tiger will always crack a bit of a smile when asked about John Daly. And yeah, because of that, he is a genuine golfing legend. Sure, he doesn't have 7 majors like Arnold Palmer or 9 like Gary Player or 14 or 15, but he's got 2 and that's good enough for me.
Yeah. What a place to end. That's fantastic. Greggy, thank you. What a guest.
My pleasure.
Perfect guest and subject matter fit. Yeah,
fountain of knowledge.
Yeah, right.
And experience.
Yeah. Look forward to hearing the other stories down at Hooters. We're off to Nottingham for our only local branch.
Looking forward to doing the live episode there.
Hell yeah. Thanks a lot, mate.
Top man.
Thanks, Zach.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.